From KUOW, I'm Ross Reynolds. 49 states now have laws on bullying. Schools have policies and punishments. But Slate senior editor Emily Bazelon says there's a risk that in searching for solutions to bullying, we could be causing more harm than good. Her new book is called Sticks and Stones. Emily Bazelon is a senior editor at Slate and a contributing writer to the New York Times and magazine, and also a fellow at the Yale Law School. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Were you ever a bully, or were you ever bullied? I can remember when I was a kid, boy, if I ever meet Vern Tower, I'm going to have to apologize to that guy. There was a whole Lord of the Flies thing going on with him, and we were not very nice to him. How about you?
Well, that's good that you're thinking back on that. I had an experience in eighth grade where my friends essentially fired me, and I was really miserable for a few months and tortured in that way girls can be. I spent a lot of time picking myself apart and thinking about what I had done wrong to cause this disaster to come down upon myself.
There we hear the Mean Girls, movie called Mean Girls. Are there any gender differences on bullying? Are girls meaner than boys when it comes to that?
There are some gender differences. Interestingly, boys still bully more than girls do. I know that's kind of counterintuitive because we pay a lot of attention to mean girls. But boys bully other boys and girls, whereas girls usually tend to just bully other girls. I do think, though, there's something particularly devastating about the way girls can turn on other girls they have been friends with. It's that kind of traitorous move that can really get under kids' skin.
Is there a universal understanding of what we mean by bullying? Just the definition so we know what we're talking about.
There should be, and it's a definition that comes from the psychologists who have studied this for many years. And that definition is verbal or physical abuse that is repeated over time and involves a power imbalance. And so I think what's important there is we're not talking about a one-off fight or what kids often call drama that kind of goes back and forth. We're talking about a concerted campaign over time to really make another kids miserable. And that's the kind of behavior that kids themselves say is the hardest for them to deal with.
Now, one of the things that you point out is that the person who bullies isn't necessarily just doing it because they're a rotten person. They're actually getting some advantage out of it.
Right. This is can be kind of rational behavior, not good behavior, but it can be rational. And that's because if you're in a kind of combative culture at school or in a community, being mean and aggressive can be a way to advance socially. And so there are definitely kids in my book who were prone to bullying because there was all this kind of back and forth conflict going on. And so they were being mean and aggressive to make sure that someone else didn't step on them.
Now, do kids who get disciplined for bullying stop bullying?
Sometimes they do, but I think we've put too much emphasis on punishment in this whole conversation and not enough on prevention. You know, one thing about bullying is it's really easy to start feeling a lot of moral outrage about particular kids who are labeled as bullies. And sometimes they deserve that, and it's not as if punishment has no place in this. But I think that if we start thinking more about what the underlying conditions are and why kids are acting this way, we're going to end up doing more to address the problem.
We're talking about bullying with Emily Bazelon, senior editor at Slate. The new book is called Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying and Rediscovering the Power of Character and Empathy. It's her first book. Now, there are, seem to be problems in both doing too much and doing too little when it comes to solutions to bullying. Former prosecutor Liz Wild was criticizing this New York bullying law that you might be familiar with, saying that under it, insulting a person because of race, religion, and physical appearance or sexual orientation is treated the same as physical abuse. And she thought that that's like going too far. That's including too many things in it. What do you think about that? Is that going too far?
I do think that some states have adopted very broad definitions where we're not necessarily talking about repeated behavior. It can be kind of any gesture. And that can lead to a lot of bureaucratic reporting and investigating as opposed to really thinking about the context for what's happening. I do think, though, that when kids are bullied because they're of their race or because they're disabled or LGBT kids we know are really at higher risk, that's a kind of discrimination. And so in those cases, I think it's appropriate and important for schools to think of addressing bullying as a kind of broader fight against making sure that everyone is welcome at the school.
How about the other problem of maybe not paying enough attention to it? You know, we hear about it a lot. There's 49 states schools have all kinds of rules and regulations, but is there still a lot of bullying that's flying under the radar?
Yes, I think that is happening. And here's why. Schools have had a fair amount of success with zero tolerance policies about violence. So we're seeing the rates of kids fighting in school physically going down. But that can drive the bullying into things like eye rolling and exclusion, making sure that, you know, someone knows they're not welcome at the lunch table. Those are harder to make a rule against, right? You can't have a rule against eye rolling. And they're also harder.
Although my wife would love to.
At your house, at least. They're also the kinds of behavior that can be harder for adults to pick up on. And so we are still having a problem with some educators and parents, too, turning a blind eye.
What do you mean parents don't pick up on it? Give me an example of what you mean.
Well, if you have a girl who's being kind of clever and, you know, especially if she's enlisting other girls in making another girl feel bad, it can be hard to see. So, for example, there was one girl in my book who would say to other kids at her school, "Where did you get your clothes?" And that could be an innocent question, but she was asking one girl in particular who was a poor kid whose clothes were clearly secondhand. And so for that girl, it was a kind of devastating question. But on its face, it didn't immediately signal bullying.
Wow, that seems to raise a lot of questions, though. If a question like that, that could be interpreted either way, how do you interpret it as bullying? I mean, how could the girl could perfectly say, no, what do you mean? It's a question I ask everybody.
This school had a really wise guidance counselor. And what she was doing was collecting reports of bullying from kids without threatening suspension. She was just saying, if someone's saying mean stuff to you, will you just come in and tell me about it? And let's write it down. And so over time, what she found was a pattern. And this girl was saying this kind of thing and other cruel things to other kids. And enough kids were feeling wounded by it that this guidance counselor or could tell that this girl was up to no good.
We're at 206-543-5869. We're talking about bullying with Emily Bazelon, who wrote a book about it called Sticks and Stones. And we're also at 800-289-5869. Maybe it's become an issue for your kids. Maybe it was an issue for you. Maybe you were bullied. Maybe you were a bullier. We're at conversation@kuow.org. And over the years, we've been talking about this with Mike Donlin, who's the program supervisor for the Washington State School Safety Center. Mike's been working on anti-bullying with the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction since the early 2000s. And he and Emily know one another from their work on this. Mike, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Ross.
You know,
How are you doing, Emily?
Hey, nice to talk to you, Mike. I'm doing well.
You know, we were just talking about how sometimes you get to go too far and sometimes you cannot go far enough. Do you think in our state we've figured out the right balance when it comes to dealing with bullying?
Good question. I think the answer to that would be we're working on it. We have a really strong piece of legislation and policy and procedures that go behind our efforts to minimize and eliminate bullying. But a lot of it is it takes a lot of time and effort and training and understanding. And I think I would underscore everything that Emily has said because we deal with those kinds of things on a daily basis in schools in terms of understanding what we're talking about, boys and girls, reporting, all those kind of things. Yeah, we're working on it.
There's dealing with it after it's happened, Mike. But then, of course, you'd want to try to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Exactly.
Do we know how to do that?
Well, that's part of the deal is, I'm really happy when Emily mentioned that word prevention because that's part of my message. Prevention is first, and although I know that awareness is a piece of prevention, I always like to talk about awareness right up front and say, okay, let's be aware of what we're talking about. Let's define the terms. What does it look like? How does it present itself? What do we do when we see it happen? And so a lot of the work that I do when I'm working with schools and districts and parents and even in the classrooms with kids, is to talk about that upfront part of it. We talk in terms of bullying as a learned behavior, so we can unlearn it, and we can also be aware and do the prevention part of it, and then we're not going to have as much to deal with on the back end, so to speak.
Well, there's that teaching, and also the subtitle of Emily's book refers to the power of empathy.
Right.
In your experience, can you teach kids empathy?
Absolutely.
How?
Well, there's a lot of wonderful work out there that we're trying to make sure is available to schools along with just simply, quote-unquote, bullying prevention. What we like to talk in terms of is a larger school climate and building empathy. There's some great programs to do that, a lot of nice curriculum that does exactly that, so that it's the young folks who need that help or just simply kick things in, you know, jump start things. We'll have lessons and models and practice building on those things because, as again, we're talking about a larger climate, school climate issue.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for talking to us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ross.
Mike Donlan, Program Supervisor for the Washington State School Safety Center. And this question of teaching empathy, I mean, we know that children's minds are not fully developed. Probably their moral sense is not fully developed. Can you teach them? Do we have proven cases of teaching kids empathy, Emily?
Yes, we do. And I think it's important to think of this as instilling empathy and as something that parents as well as schools are responsible for. So one small thing parents can do is just around the dinner table say, you know, can you imagine what it feels like to be that other kid if your child's telling a story about a kid who's having trouble, or using books or movies to help kids kind of get out of their own skin into someone else's? And I talk a lot about this in my book and have lists of resources and strategies to help parents do that.
But I'm wondering if bullied kids don't learn the lesson that bullying is a good thing. I mean, are they taught to bully by bullies?
Sometimes that happens, and that's the dynamic we have to help them reverse. I think one important thing Mike was underscoring is that this is on all of us, and it has to be something that we tend over time. You can't have like one assembly and then you check bullying off your list. You have to think of it as a garden that you can plant in one day of raised awareness, but then that you're tending to over time with a successful program. And there are actually a couple of really good curriculum that come from Seattle written by the Committee for Children that help address this.
What are some examples of the things they do?
They help kids build vocabulary for expressing and regulating their emotions. So literally starting in kindergarten, what are the words you use if you're feeling angry and out of control, or if you see someone else being cruel to someone? And what you see when kids have gone through a curriculum like this over time is that they have these particular terms they turn to when they see a peer situation become abusive. And it allows them to do a lot of the prevention work themselves, which is what we want, because this is really about their culture.
Now, you mentioned earlier that sexual minorities are frequently the object of bullies. Any more so than other kids?
Yes. The rates of bullying and harassment for LGBT kids are much higher than for other kids. And I think what we're seeing here, and hopefully not so much in places like Seattle, but certainly some parts of the country, is this kind of underlying hostility in which the teenagers who are doing the taunting or the physical bullying are really picking up on the cues of the adults around them. And they're seeing that this is a kind of disapproval and a kind of meanness that the adults are not going to call them on.
Do bullies create bullies among their children? Is it learned behavior from parents?
Often bullies are in families where there is domestic violence or child abuse or even just really cruel sibling behavior. So yes, we do see a way in which the kind of aggression and meanness can be passed through the generations like that.
You know, as I was preparing for this interview, I saw about some research at the University of Warwick, and it tried to connect parenting that might lead to it. And the conclusion of this, it was a meta study of 70 studies of 200,000 children, was that poor parenting, including overprotection, increases the bullying at risk. Well, I could see how poor parenting by modeling bullying behavior would lead to that. But how can overprotection lead to bullying? Or do you agree with that result?
I do agree with that result. I've seen that study. And I think the problem here is that kids need to encounter some adversity, right? They need to practice aggression. They need to learn, or dealing with aggression. They need to learn how you deal with someone being angry with you. And so sometimes when parents hover too much and try to make kids' lives perfect, they take away from them the tools they need to deal with the situation. And then that can make something going wrong really hard for kids to deal with.
Now, you've worked on this for quite a while. Were there any kind of aha moments in your research, either by talking to children or by looking into what other people have studied on this, where you just went, that really surprises me about bullying. I never would have guessed that.
Yes. Recently, some researchers from Duke came up with findings. They had done a study on victims of bullying and also kids who are both bullies and victims. And they found strikingly higher rates of anxiety and depression and suicidal thinking 20 years after the fact.
Wow.
And what the lead researcher said to me when we were talking about this was that these results were so striking that he was going to start arguing in his field that we need to take this form of peer abuse just as seriously as we take child abuse. And that really did surprise me, because obviously we think of child abuse as such an enormous problem in this country.
Do parents ignore bullying by their kids? Do they have a hard time being convinced that their kid's a bully?
I think that is a function of parenting culture right now. There are a lot of parents who are so concerned with making sure their kids achieve that they're very loath to see any wrong in them. And I think what we've lost was this kind of older ethic where it takes a village meant that if you saw another person's kid behaving badly, you could call them out and you could say to the parents, hey, you're going to want to address this. And the other parent would say, thank you. Now I think people worry that parents are going to be defensive in that situation. And that means that we've lost an important weapon for addressing kids' behavior.
Is bullying between older and younger brothers a special flavor of bullying?
It is. There is a kind of subsection of this that is known as sibling abuse. And it is true, as we were saying before, that kids who are bullied by an older brother or sister are more likely to then lash out in school themselves.
Now, we're talking about this mainly in regard to children, but there are those who say that adults can also be bullied in the workplace. Are we talking about something qualitatively different when we're talking about bullying that takes place out among adults?
Well, adults aren't as vulnerable as children, right? We don't worry that they're not as developed neurologically, and we expect them, I think, to kind of take care of themselves and be a little tougher. However, the workplace really does have a hierarchy to it, right? And so if someone is bullying you at work and really has more power than you, that can be absolutely a very difficult situation to be in. And especially if it goes on over time and involves a lot of coworkers, that can be very hard to deal with. So, you know, workplace bullying is a real phenomenon.
Emily Bazelon is with us for a few more minutes. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. If you've got a question for her about bullying, about the book that she wrote called Sticks and Stones. In the wake of the Newtown shooting, the NRA called for more armed guards in schools. And there already are armed guards in many schools. And according to critics, they haven't made the schools safer, but the security guards have actually turned discipline problems into arrests and into and these happen to disproportionately involve minorities. When we get armed police in schools, are they sort of looking at bullying? And you started out by saying sometimes we're too focused on punishment. Is that coming in place because of these armed guards in schools?
I do think we have to be worried about this. You know, there are now 34 states that have required schools to punish kids for bullying or criminalized bullying. And so then when you combine that with having police in the schools, you can just kind of ratchet up all the punishing that's going on. And so, you know, instead of trying to deal with something in a more low-key way, a kid who's labeled a bully can end up funneled into the criminal justice system. And that may not turn out to be the best solution.
I mean, bullying in prisons, let's not even go there. I mean, that's sort of the culture entirely, it sounds as though, like. What don't you know about bullying that you'd like to find out after having written the book?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, I'm just still incredibly interested in people's individual stories. And the most curious, I think, about how the online world is affecting teenagers today. That's such a variable in their lives. And, you know, obviously for parents like me, we just were not on Facebook and other social media sites. We weren't texting all day when we were teenagers. So I find that to be just incredibly, perpetually fascinating.
Emily Bazelon, so nice to have you back. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
The book is called Sticks and Stones. David Hyde produces our show with Arwen Nix. We get production help from Hannah Byrne, Cameron Drews, Andy Hurst, and Amber Cortez. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.